For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
It is May 8th, Sosa Yom Yerushalayim. And we are in Shmuel, we are in up to Perek Tes Vav, chapter 15. Now, just to mention, because we didn't focus on it at the end of the last Perek, just to mention, at the end of the last Perek, the children of Shaul and his wife is mentioned, his sons, his daughters, and his general, who is his cousin. They're all mentioned. All these personalities will be important later on. Right now, it just mentions that Shaul had children named sons, and Yonah's son Yishvi and Malkishua, and he had daughters named Merav and Michal, and his wife's name was Achinoam bas Achimoatz, and his general was Avner, who is the cousin of Shaul. All those personalities will come up later on. So Perek Tes Vav, chapter 15, pasuk Aleph. Vayomer Shmuel el Shaul. Shmuel said to Shaul, O si shalach Hashem limshachacha lemelech al amo Yisrael. Hashem sent me to anoint you as king on his nation on Yisrael. Ve'ata shema. And now listen, the kol divrei Hashem, to the words of Hashem, the voice of the words of Hashem. So this is Shmuel's introduction to the next thing he's going to tell Shaul. And the next thing he's going to tell Shaul is about the mitzvah of wiping out Amalek. So why the preamble? Why does he tell him that Hashem sent me to anoint you as king on his nation Israel? Now listen to the voice of Hashem. Why does he need the preamble?
Emphasize that it's Hashem's decision, not
Shmuel's. Yeah. The Rashi says over here that Shmuel was saying to Shaul, Pam achas niskalta. One time you slipped up. Ata hi zoher ba'atzmecha. Now, take good care of yourself. Be careful to listen. Meaning that Shaul already did not listen to the words of Shmuel once. There were extenuating circumstances, but he didn't listen. And Shmuel is aware that this next job also has the potential of Shaul not listening properly. So he tells him to be careful. So we who know that the outcome of the story is going to be that Shaul in fact did not listen properly, so this warning obviously is important, but it does not do the trick. He still does not listen properly. Again, we're going to find that the issue is going to be very subtle. And we're also going to find that at the end of the whole story, at the end of Shaul's life, he's still considered to be the great tzaddik that he always was. But he is not going to listen fully to the words of Shmuel again. Koma Hashem Tzvakos, so says Hashem Tzvakos. Pakhanati Esa Asher Asa Amalek Li Yisrael. I have remembered that which Amalek did to Yisrael. What did Amalek do to Yisrael? Asher Sam Lo Baderech. That they ambushed Klal Yisrael on the road, Ba'alo Somi Mitzrayim, when the Jews were coming up out of Egypt. Amalek attacked on the road while we were coming up from Egypt. I've mentioned to you before that we Jews have three mitzvot when we enter Eretz Yisrael. Number one is to anoint a king. Number two is to wipe out Amalek. And number three is to build the Beis HaMikdash. So here is the second mitzvah, which is to wipe out Amalek. So I've remembered that which Amalek did, which is that they ambushed Klal Yisrael when they left Mitzrayim. Ata, now, Lech v'hikisas Amalek, go and strike Amalek, v'hachanamtem es kol ha'shalo, you shall destroy all that he has. V'lo sachmol alav, do not have mercy on him. V'heimata, and you shall kill, Me'ish ad isha, from man to woman. Me'oleo ve'ad yonek, from child to infant. Mishor ve'ad seh, from bull to sheep. Migamol ve'ad chamor, from camel until donkey. Everything they have. Everything that breathes. Whether it's people or animals, whether it's men or women, whether it's children or babies, makes no difference. Everything must be killed.
Understand that animals have to be killed.
So hold on. Let's keep going.
Later.
Yeah. Well, we'll discuss it all. But let's not get stuck on a detail just yet. Vayeshama Shaul et Ha'am, and Shaul he announced to the people, which means he
made them.
It says summoned the people. That's a good translation. Vayifkedem batimayim, he counted them using sheep. Because we know that you're not supposed to count Jews. So he counted them using sheep. As Chazal explained, Rashi says, each person, each soldier came and took a sheep from the sheep of the treasury of the king. And then, when he gave it back, they counted it. So it cost nothing to the individual soldier. But this way they were able to count how many people there were. And how many were there? Masayim Elef Ragli, 200,000 foot soldiers. Va'aseres halafim etzish Yehuda, and 10,000 from the men of Yehuda. Yehuda is almost always singled out when an army is counted. Those from Yehuda are singled out. This is true even though Shaul is the king and he's from Binyamin. Nevertheless, it is the soldiers of Yehuda who are always singled out as apparently the main soldiers. Va'yavo Shaul al Yir Amalek, and Shaul came to the city of Amalek. Va'yirev banochal, and he. It literally means he fought in the valley. Vayira vanachal, he fought in the valley. So, there is a medrash here that the Chazal Seir sages say that he fought with himself. He had an internal battle involving nachal. Nachal means a valley, because we know that if a Jew is found murdered on the road and you don't know who murdered him, what is the mitzvah?
Yeah. Whatever city is closest, the men have come and bury.
Okay, they come and they do an egla arufa, so that you find the closest city, and that city has to bring an egla arufa, a calf that is then killed. So Shaul said, if for one soul, the Torah says that you have to bring an egla arufa. So for all these souls, all the more so. If the one soul is so precious that we don't just let it go, we have to bring an egla arufa. So in this case, where there are so many souls, all the more so. Listen how serious this is, that we're going to kill out all these people. He also said to himself, the people sinned, but not the animals. Why are we wiping out the animals? So he had this internal struggle. Now he knows the mitzvah. The mitzvah was not made up by Shmuel. The mitzvah is in the Torah itself. Shaul knows the mitzvah. Shaul is a great Talmud Chacham, great Torah scholar, and a great tzaddik. He knows the mitzvah. But he is struggling now that it is time to carry it out. So he is struggling with the mitzvah itself. Vayomer Shaul al Akeni, Shaul said to the Keni, who are the descendants of Yisro, L'chu suru redu mitoch Amaleki, get up or go and remove yourselves and go down from amongst Amalek. The Keni lived amongst the Amaleki, and he told them, you should remove yourselves from there. Peno sifcha imo, lest I destroy you with them. You, the Keni, meaning the descendants of Yisro, referring to Yisro himself, did kindness with all the Jewish people, when they came up from Egypt. You, Yisro, was the opposite of Amalek. Yisro did chesed with all the Jewish people rather than ambushing the Jewish people. So you should remove yourselves from there. Now, and Vayasa Keni Mitoch Amalek, and the Keni, that means Yisro's descendants, they removed themselves from amongst the Amaleki. How did Yisro do kindness with all the Jewish people?
He converted.
That's true. How's that doing kindness with all the Jewish people?
He did the judging. He changed the judge system.
So okay,
that people could judge more quickly.
Okay, so he changed the judgment system, which what made it better for the people, because until then they had to wait in line for Moshe, and now he gave them a better way of doing it. However, that's what I would have said as well. But our sages tell us that that the way that he did kindness with all the Jewish people is because he made a seuda. There was a seuda, there was a meal, a feast that was made when he came. And in his meal, he brought karbanos, and through those karbanos, he made a feast. And the feast was for Moshe, and for Aaron, and for the elders of Israel. That's what it was for. It wasn't for everybody. He didn't make a feast for millions of people. He made a feast for the leaders of the people, for Moshe and Aaron and the Zekanim and the elders. And because of that, it's considered as if he did kindness with all the Jewish people. Because he did kindness for the leadership of the Jewish people, that is as if he did kindness for all the Jewish people. Vayach Shaul lets Amalek. Amalek, Shaul struck Amalek. Mechavila bo achashur, from Chavila until you come to Shur. Ashar pnei Mitzrayim, which is on the face of Egypt. So he struck Amalek. Vayispos es Agag melech Amalek chai, and he caught Agag, the king of Amalek, alive. Ve'es kol ha'am hecharim lefichariv, and the entire nation he killed by the sword. Vayachmol Shaul v'ha'am al Agag. Shaul and the nation had pity on Agag. Ve'almeitav atzon, and on the best of the sheep. Ve'habakar, and the cattle. Ve'hamishnim, which is another word for very healthy animals. Very healthy, like clearly large, healthy animals, right? Ve'alakarim, also another word for types of good animals. Ve'alkol atov, and all the good things. Ve'lo avu akarimam, they didn't want to destroy them. But everything else that was not so nice, that they destroyed. So they wiped out everything. They killed everything. Amalek was a large nation. They killed every man. They killed every woman. They killed every child. They killed every baby. They killed every infant. They killed every animal. They killed every dog and every cat and every camel and every horse and every donkey and every cow and every sheep and every goat. They killed the pet, whatever pets there were. They killed everything. They left alive one human being, Agag, and they left alive the choicest of the animals, the best of the animals.
Was Agag very heavy?
Was Agag very heavy?
Yeah.
Why do you say that?
When the sword went in and came out on both sides, no?
Eglon.
That would be, the Eglon was very heavy.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Okay. The Agag does meet his end in a very gruesome way, but not that way.
Isn't there a midrash that his wife turned into an animal?
Okay, so we'll get the midrash in a minute. But okay. Right, but this is what the pasuk tells us. They killed everything. So, a person has to do a mitzvah. And it's a difficult mitzvah to do. So, let's say a person is faced with a very difficult situation. They have a person who they know they don't get along with. This person is a person who really gets under my skin, irks me. Every time I see him, he says the wrong thing, makes me angry, and I just, very hard to deal with him. But unfortunately, I need to be with him at a meal. We're sitting together, and I can't avoid it. I'm at his table, and he's sitting there, and he's saying all the wrong things, and he's pushing all my buttons. And I'm sitting there, and I am telling myself, don't lose it. Keep your cool. Stay calm. Just smile and stay calm. Stay steady. The meal goes on. It's one of these dinners that goes on for several hours, and I'm good. I'm sitting there, and my wife knows that he's pushing all my buttons, and she knows I'm about to explode, and she's happy. I'm keeping my cool, and I'm sitting there, and it's good. And we're getting, we're almost done. I'm really, you know, it, towards the end of the dinner, he says something really, really, that really gets me. And at that moment, I just like, you know, I say something like, would you mind? And then I go back to eating, but then I stay calm, I get through the meal. Okay, go home. So, was I successful?
Mostly.
Do you think that I should be proud of myself?
No.
I think so. Depends how you were last time with him. Was it an improvement or not?
Okay.
That sounds pretty good to me.
See, I basically did it. It's true, it wasn't perfect. But I'm a human being, right? So it wasn't perfect. I have room to improve. But I essentially did what I wanted to do.
But this guy's never going to forget that. Do you mind?
Well, we probably have a long history. Right?
Okay.
So what I'm trying to say is that I think most of us, when we perform mitzvahs that are very difficult, I'm not talking about an easy mitzvah, you know, mitzvahs that are not easy, that are not fun, that are not enjoyable, those types of mitzvahs, and we do a pretty good job, and we mess up a little bit, I think most of us will walk out of there patting ourselves on the back. We did a pretty good job. Not that there's no room to improve. There's room to improve, do better next time. But I think we will feel pretty good about ourselves. We did essentially what we needed to do. Shaul did that. The issue over here was, this mitzvah is a very difficult mitzvah to do. There are mitzvahs in the Torah. We know most of the mitzvahs in the Torah. Most of the mitzvahs in the Torah sit well with us. Most of them do. Shabbos, Yom Kippur, the Yom Tovim, it may be difficult, but we don't ideologically have a problem with Pesach. Maybe a difficult thing to do, but it's a mitzvah. Most mitzvahs sit well with us. There are some mitzvahs that some people have a harder time with. With mitzvah of not speaking Lashon Hara, most of us can understand the value in that. Giving tzedakah, most of us can understand the value in that. But not every mitzvah is one that makes perfect sense to us. But we know we have to do them. But it's one thing to have read about it and know that it's a mitzvah. It's another thing to actually perform it. And when you have to perform it, it can start to feel difficult to do. And some mitzvahs are difficult to do. You know, the mitzvah in the Torah of sending away the mother bird. Shaleach teshalach es ha'im ves habanim tikach lach. So don't take the aim al habanim, don't take the mother with the children. Send away the mother and take away the children. You know what happens when you send away the mother bird and take away the children? No, well, you want to kill them. You're going to eat them. Right? But what happens when you send away the mother bird and take away the children? You know what happens to that mother? With many birds, the mother comes back to the nest and discovers an empty nest and begins to scream because her children are missing.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful mitzvah, isn't it?
Oh.
But that's the mitzvah. That's the mitzvah. So it would have been better to maybe kill the mother bird with the kids rather than send her away and have her come back to an empty nest? The mitzvah is you send away the mother bird. That's the mitzvah. But the mother bird is going to scream. Okay, that's what the Torah says to do. For whatever reason, this is the better thing to do. I don't know if it's more compassionate or less compassionate. I don't know. But this is what the Torah says to do. And that's what we do. Most of us haven't done that mitzvah. And if we have, we didn't stick around to see the mother bird come back. But that's what happens. Now, they'll say, how could that be? How could there be a mitzvah that causes pain to the mother bird? Now, we could argue that it's less painful to do that than to take the mother bird with the children and kill the children in front of the mother. These are all, the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, that the mitzvahs are anybody who says that Hashem should have rachmanus, Hashem should have mercy on us, the same way He has mercy on the mother bird, we quiet that person. We tell them that's a bad tefillah, that's a bad davening, because it's not mercy. Hashem is not being merciful to the mother bird. It is maybe teaching us compassion, but it's not that Hashem has compassion on the bird. Hashem has compassion on people, and He may be teaching us compassion through what the mitzvah. The Zohar writes that when you send away the mother bird and you take the babies, the mother bird comes back to the nest and begins to scream, "Where are my children? Where are my children?" And the malach, the angel that presides over birds, goes before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, "Is this fair? That the Jews, they took away the kids and the bird is screaming for her children?" And Hashem responds, "At least those children have a mother that's crying for them. Who's crying for my children? For the Jews." And that evokes a rachmanus, it evokes a mercy and compassion from Hashem for the Jewish people. That's what the Zohar writes. So here you have something which may appear a little bit cruel on the surface, but we don't know what's going on in the deeper levels. There's stuff happening. Every mitzvah, there's things happening. We don't get it. We don't understand. But there are things happening. But they don't always show themselves at the outset. They don't show themselves on the surface. But there are many mitzvahs like this, where you may read them in the Chumash and just read right by them, and if you actually have to put it into practice, you start to think, one second, this doesn't fit so well with me. What's the mitzvah in the Torah if, God forbid, a man molests a single girl? So, what's the halacha in the Torah?
Is there any city or not? In the field.
He has to marry her.
No, she's single, not a married woman.
He has to marry her, right?
So the mitzvah is he has to pay a fine, and then he has to marry her. And he's not allowed to divorce her.
Terrible.
He's not allowed to divorce her.
Well,
now
she can
refuse to marry him if she wants.
Well, she can.
But she can refuse. But the mitzvah is to marry her and then not being allowed to divorce her. That's what the Torah says.
But if she said no to him, how marriageable would she be?
Right. Well, that is an issue. So, in today's modern times, people would say, "Does that make any sense? You're going to take a man who molested a woman, took advantage of her, and now you're going to make her his wife, so he can what? So he can control her more, so he can take advantage of her more, so he can basically mistreat her for the rest of her life? Is that a good thing?" Hard, doesn't sit well. Doesn't seem to make sense. Okay, so she could refuse to marry him. But the Torah clearly is saying that it's probably in her best interest to marry him and then not allow him to divorce her. Well, that doesn't sit well. It's difficult to accept that. But that's what the Torah says. So we've never seen it happen because we don't have such a practice and we don't have a based in today that works that way. But the fact of the matter is that there are many things in the Torah which, if we really think them through, they don't necessarily sit well. But we understand that the Torah's wisdom transcends ours. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's wisdom transcends ours. And if the Torah says it, it is the best. It may be misunderstood. It could be that we're not understanding the Torah correctly. That's possible. Possible that it has to be understood better. It could be that we don't know what the Gemara says about it. We're just reading what the Chumash says and not really understanding it. But the fact is that there are many things in the Torah that are very, very difficult. You know, in Parshas Matos, the Jews are told to attack the nation Midian. Midian was a nation that, along with Moab, caused the Jews to sin with Bilam. They had their girls go and seduce the Jewish men. So as punishment, Hashem said to go and attack Midian. And we did. And we defeated Midian, the entire nation. Absolutely defeated them. And in battle, they killed all the men, all the soldiers. And then took as captives all the women, adults and children, and also the boys who were children. Everybody, the male soldiers they killed out, everybody else they took as captives. They got back to the camp, and Moshe says to them, "Hachayisem kol nekeva. You left all the women alive. Mm-hmm. What do you mean? These are the women who caused the Jewish men to sin. You can't leave them alive. And therefore, Here's the mitzvah that Hashem said to do. And we're talking about an entire nation of Midian who was captured by the Jewish people. This is what you need to do. Kill all of the males, meaning including the children, any male that you left alive, kill. And any woman who has ever been intimate with a man, whether it's Jewish or not Jewish, makes no difference, you got to kill her. The only women you can leave alive are those women who have never had a relationship with a man. How do they know? The Gemara says, the Medrash says they brought them in front of the Choshen. I think it was the Choshen. Maybe the Tzitz. I don't remember. And it determined who was what. So somebody once asked me, I understand you have all these POWs, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands. What do? Just walk around killing them? They didn't have guns. That's a pretty gruesome thing. They killed on the spot. They killed all these POWs. What would people say today about human rights? Babies, kids. You think it was quiet when they were doing this? You think they just acquiesced? It must have been a very gruesome thing. But that's what the Torah said to do. Killing out Amalek, which we just rattled it off our tongues, is not a simple mitzvah by any stretch of the imagination. Be'ezus Hashem, we should be zocha, we should merit to see the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash and the coming of Mashiach, and to see this mitzvah being carried out. Be'ezus Hashem, we should live to see it. And perhaps we'll even participate in it. It's not an easy mitzvah to do. It's one thing to read about it. It's another thing to have to actually take that sword and kill those babies. It's not easy. But the Torah says to do it. Shaul struggled, and he couldn't. It was hard. Like, how do I do this? But he did it. They killed every man, every woman, every child, every baby, every infant. They killed them all, just like the Torah says. They left alive one man, Agag. He had mercy on Agag. Now we have to ask ourselves, if you're going to have mercy on anybody, why have mercy on Agag?
That's right.
Have mercy on a little baby.
Right.
Why Agag? It's a fair question. It's a fair question. But he had mercy on one. And he had mercy on the animals. Now, it's true that the Medrash says that the Amalekim were able, using Kishuf, using black magic, to turn themselves into animals, and therefore some of the animals were actually people that were left alive. But he didn't deliberately leave alive any people other than Agag. He left alive the animals, as we'll see presently, in order to use them as karbonos, the best animals. It's a waste. Why would you take these beautiful animals, which could be sacrifices? They're so perfect, and we're just going to kill them? What a waste. There's so much things just being destroyed. Why just let's use them as a karbon?
So, I didn't see karbons as waste, because there was a purpose to it.
Right.
If they're just killing an animal and not eating it, then it's...
Even not to eat it, but at least to offer it as a carbon, as an ola, to burn it to Hashem. But all they're going to do over here is just, all they're doing is, it will take animals instead of people, just because it's not as gruesome to think about. They just took these animals and cut their throats and let them die. That's it. Just one after another, after another, after another,
yeah,
after another.
Told them to. So isn't that like a sacrifice when you're doing something?
Okay. But I'm trying to point out to you that we are not talking here about someone who is flagrantly violating the law of Hashem. We're talking about someone who has essentially carried it out, but not completely. And we, I think, would give ourselves a pass if it was us. Shaul doesn't get a pass. Not only does he not get a pass, he's going to get really hit hard for this. He's going to get hit over the head for this, big time. He's going to absolutely destroy his future because of this. Now, he'll still get Olam Haba, because he's still a huge tzaddik. This is the important thing to bear in mind. Despite this, he is still a huge tzaddik. And despite everything that's going to happen from here on in, because at the end of the day, it's not a huge violation. What he did over here is not comparable to some of the real egregious averos, sins that take place throughout Tanakh.
he did something relatively minor. But on his madrega, on his level, he is going to absolutely destroy himself through this. From here on in, his entire, the rest of his life, which is not that much longer, he only rules for 2.5 years, his entire kingdom, his acting as king, is downhill. One thing after another, after another, after another, after another. Yeah.
So it appears to be a minor thing, but in fact, we have Haman, we have Hitler.
Yes, yes. We assume Hitler's from that. We don't know for certain, but we assume
it's not
that
a minor thing what he did.
You're right. You're right. But when I say to him, well, what did I say? What did I say to that guy? Would you mind? But we don't recognize how horrible that is either. But it makes an impression, and who knows how he takes it? Who knows
right.
if he goes home and yells at his wife because I got him angry? Like, who knows?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
We don't know what. Right.
Exactly.
So we don't see, but at the moment it doesn't seem like a huge offense.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And more than that, we also know that Hashem judges based on how difficult the mitzvah is. We do know that as well. And that's why we give ourselves a pass, because we give ourselves, okay, Hashem, I wasn't perfect. But Hashem, you got to admit, I mean, I really put in a lot of effort, and I was really good. I mean, it was huge. It was superhuman effort I put in over there, and it was mostly good. So we feel pretty good about things like that. The thing is that Shaul, you have to keep in mind, Shaul is a great Torah scholar. And he is interpreting and understanding as he's going along. It is what the Navi is telling us is that the fact that he had mercy over here, which was misplaced, because Shmuel says to him, "Velo sachmol alav," do not have mercy. When you go to kill Amalek, you need to absolutely tear that rachmanos, that mercy, out of yourself. You need to act cruel, because that's the mitzvah. You say, but cruelty is a bad thing. Cruelty is not a bad thing. Cruelty is bad when it is used at the wrong time. Most of the time, cruelty is the wrong time. Most of the time, it's the wrong time for cruelty, and therefore cruelty is most of the time bad. But there is a situation where cruelty is good, and that is when killing out a Amalek. You need to absolutely remove it from yourself. And Shaul still had it in him, and he had that mercy over there. And that is what caused him to misinterpret the law. It is not that Shaul felt terrible. How can I kill this? Because like we just said, then why not leave the babies alive? Why are you killing the babies and leaving alive the king? What Shaul is having over here is there is, deep down inside of him, there is some rachmanos, some mercy that's there, which he has not absolutely eradicated from himself. And it expresses itself in interpreting the mitzvah in a way that is incorrect. And he says to himself, well, I have to kill the animals. Well, but this beautiful animal, I can kill it as a carbon. Why don't I kill it here? And the king, okay, I can kill the king. It doesn't have to be right this second. I'm going to kill him right now. I could bring him back. I could show the people, the king, make a spectacle out of him. When one nation conquers another nation, who is the most important person to kill?
The leader.
The king. You kill the king, then everybody else is leaderless, and they're much more likely to now have to become subservient to you. Here, there's no one to make subservient. They're all dead. So I don't need to kill the king to make everybody else subservient, because there is no one that thinks subservient over here. So the normal tactical reason to get rid of that king doesn't exist. When the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, their name should be blotted out. When they came into a town, the first thing they did was they dragged the rabbi out to the street and shot him. That's the first thing they did. Because you get rid of the leader, the people don't have any direction. It's a lot easier to get them. Here, there's no tactical reason to do it, because the animal people are the lead. They're all dead. So there was no strategic reason to kill Agag. So then, perhaps the thing to do is, now I don't know exactly what Shaul wanted to do with Agag, but it is possible that he wanted to take Agag back as a spectacle. Here is the man that, that this represents Amalek. Let's make a public killing of this final Amalek. Take him back. perhaps. Perhaps he wanted Agag to see the destruction of everything else before killing Agag. Let him see with his own eyes. Let him see how we're killing everything. And as soon as we take those animals, your animals, you who despise God, we're going to take your best animals and we're going to offer them as karbanos to God Himself. And there's just desserts, and then we'll kill you. The Navi is telling us the reason for Shaul making these mistakes is because there was some mercy in him for Amalek, that he hadn't fully eradicated the mercy. But that's not what was at the forefront. You wouldn't be able to tell that he wasn't crying over this. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been able to kill the babies. Shaul killed the babies. He was able to force himself that this is the mitzvah of Hashem. And he killed the babies. I want to emphasize, I know it's gruesome to think about, but I want to emphasize, when you don't have gunpowder, killing is a much more gruesome thing. It's much more difficult. And to go and do it, it's hard to do. It's hard to do. And they did it. They didn't have gunpowder, they didn't have gas, none of this stuff. It was by the sword. Everybody by the sword. That's individual. That's one after another. And he did it. But the Navi is telling us there was a shemet, there was a little bit of rachmanos, of mercy, inside of Shaul, and that clouded his vision. And he began to misinterpret the mitzvah. Not in a terrible, terrible way, but enough that he left alive some of the things he wasn't supposed to leave alive. Yeah, you have a question? No.
Agag Yimach Shemo, he knew that every Jew has rachmanos. Because when Shmuel came to get rid of him, what did Agag say? He said, Achein sar mar hamalas. I thought that the mercy of the king had gone away, because he knew that kind of argument would pour rachmanis on him.
Well, the Rashi interprets that phrase a little differently.
Oh, yeah.
But we'll see when we get there. But that's a good point. That's a good point. In the Asher Haini that we say after the Megillah reading on Purim night, that paragraph we say, one of the stanzas in there is that Haman didn't remember the rachmanos that Shaul showed for Agag. And Haman turned around and tried to kill us all. The Torah says there's another time we're supposed to kill everybody. That's when they first went into Eretz Yisrael. They had to kill the seven nations that lived there. Everybody there.
They didn't do it either.
Well, but they did a lot of it. So it was men, women, and children also.
Right.
All of them.
Right.
They were allowed to leave, and some say they were allowed to convert. But if they didn't leave and didn't convert, then they were killed. So the Torah says over there, you have to do the mitzvah, and then it says that if you do this, then Hashem, it says, V'nasan l'cha rachamim v'richam chavir becha. Hashem will give you mercy and be merciful to you and increase you as a reward for doing the mitzvah.
Uh-huh.
So some of the commentaries ask, why does it say V'nasan l'cha rachamim? He will give you mercy v'richamcha, and He will have mercy towards you.
Uh-huh.
It seems redundant. So some of the commentaries explain that v'nasan l'cha rachamim doesn't mean Hashem will be merciful to you. That's what v'richamcha, the next word, means. Hashem will be merciful to you. V'nasan l'cha rachamim means Hashem will give you the capacity to be merciful. Because since you needed to be cruel in this manner to kill these people, then when you return, Hashem will give you the capacity for mercy, so that you don't become transformed into some sort of monster. Exactly your point.
But didn't we have that to begin with? We're Jews.
That's
we had rachmanis,
kind of,
yes.
That's our nature.
Yes.
You know? So
yeah.
What does it mean that Hashem will give us?
He will give us, restore.
More?
Yeah, He'll restore our rachmanis.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question. When Avraham Avinu was told to kill his own son, Avraham Avinu, every fiber of his being was chesed, was kindness. Every fiber of his being was against child sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
His whole life he stood for that. And here Hashem told him, go and do it. Avraham successfully was able to essentially eradicate that chesed from within him when it came to this mitzvah.
I don't think he eradicated it. I think he understood the fact that this is what Hashem says, and therefore that's it. I mean, whatever it is, but he was able to somehow bypass or set aside that chesed that he had built up over a lifetime. It was something which he had ingrained in himself over and over and over and over again, and here he was able to push it aside and do the mitzvah of Hashem. Avram was successful. Shaul was being asked to do something similar, not for his own son, but granted, but still, the mass killing, it's very, very difficult.
Yeah,
okay, it could very well be that he has mercy on Agag because he is seeing himself in Agag. Mm-hmm. He already knows he's going to lose the kingdom, right, eventually. Could be many generations later, but he knows it's eventually going to leave him from his first mistake. So it could be that that's what triggers the mercy in Agag. Could be. Now, as soon as this happens, the next pasuk is going to tell us how Hashem appears to Shmuel and will tell him that it's all over with Shaul. Before we do that, I want to step back for a minute. I just want to call your attention to it. We'll talk about it more later. And I have spoken about this in the past, but it's been several years, I think, since we did it. I just want to just emphasize for you that in Pasuk Beis, in verse 2, where it says what Amalek did to us, they ambushed us. That was the problem. What did Amalek do that was so bad? They ambushed us. Asher samlo baderech, on the road. There's an emphasis here that it was done while we were traveling. And the treachery of what they did is because they attacked while we were traveling. So I just want to call your attention to that. We're going to come back to that, Mirtz Hashem, in a future, either the next class or the one after that, depending on when we get to that particular part of this discussion. Yeah.
Why did we have to do it? Why couldn't Hashem have sent a plague to Amalek?
He could have. What do you think the answer to that question is?
Why did we have to?
So what do you think the answer is?
The practice that's terrible.
It sounds like we had to do it. We had a mitzvah to do. Hashem wants us to do a mitzvah.
So why?
Why does he want us to do a mitzvah? The mitzvahs are what give us... The mitzvahs bring us close to him. Yeah, so not every mitzvah is easy to do.
That's for sure.
Right? No, nobody likes to fast on Yom Kippur. Nobody likes it.
This is very different.
It's only very different because we accept the fact that it's important that we do teshuva, and we can understand that getting away from eating is a pretty good way to focus on Hashem instead of on ourselves. We kind of get it, but we don't like it. But we kind of get it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not fun, but we kind of get it. The problem over here is it's hard to get. That's the hard part.
But didn't you in one class say that it had to be someone from the tribe of Binyamin who
yes.
would go against someone
yeah.
like
we're going to get to that as well. Yeah. No, we have to talk about the point of Derech, of the road, and Amalek, and Binyamin. This is a whole thing we'll get to. Mirtz Hashem. But we're not ready for that yet. We also need to emphasize the point that Yisro's descendants were amongst the Amaleki. And Yisro really is diametrically opposed to Amalek, as we pointed out, because Amalek attacked us on the road, and Yisro did chesed for all of us on the road, or actually at Har Sinai. So that's something else which needs a little bit of attention. So, Mitz Hashem, we have to get to that as well.
They were actually Amalekites?
No, they were living amongst them. They were living amongst them. That was where they naturally settled, for whatever reason, and that we have to discuss as well.
So they weren't descendants, they just lived them.
They weren't descendants of?
Amalek.
No.
Yisro.
They were descendants of Yisro. Okay.
But didn't Yisro try to convert all of his family? Isn't that why he left and went back?
Yes, these were, well, yeah, okay, the question is were they Jewish or not. I don't know if they all converted it or not. Not sure.
Okay.
Pasuk Yud, verse 10. Vayhi Dvar Hashem al Shmuel Lemar, the word of Hashem came to Shmuel saying, Nichamti, I have... changed my mind. I have regretted. Ki imlachti es Shaul lemelech, that I have made Shaul king. Ki shav me'acharai, for he has turned from behind me. Ve'es devarai lo hekim, and he did not establish my word. Pretty harsh. Vayichar li Shmuel. Shmuel was distressed by this. Vayizak el Hashem kol halayla. And he cried out to Hashem all night. All night. This is the whole story is tragic when you think of Shaul. But you have to think of Shmuel as well. Shaul is Shmuel's student.
Protégé.
His protege. Right. And here, this is failure. This is failure. And Shmuel cries out to Hashem all night for his student, for Shaul. Vayashkem Shmuel likras Shaul baboker. Shmuel gets up early in the morning to greet Shaul. Now, where is he going to find Shaul? Where would Shaul be? Where did Amalek live? Amalek lived at the south of Eretz Yisrael. That's where Amalek lived. They were at the south. Vayugam Shmuel lemar, it was told to Shmuel saying, Ba Shaul ha-Karmela. Shaul has come to Carmel. To Har ha-Karmel, Mount Carmel. Where is that?
North, isn't it?
That's up north.
Yeah.
That's up north. What is Shaul doing up north? He was down south the previous day when he destroyed Amalek. And now the next early in the morning, he somehow is up north at Carmel. V'hineh matziv lo yad. And he is, what's he doing up there? He's building a mizbeach. He's building an altar. That's what he's doing. Why is he building an altar?
To sacrifice
those
animals.
To sacrifice those animals. Vayisov vayavor. And he turned and he went. Vayered at Gilgal and he went down to Gilgal. So he turned around and he went to Gilgal. And that's also a little bit hard to understand. What does Gilgal have to do over here? Gilgal is on the eastern side of Eretz Yisrael. It's really not exactly clear where Gilgal is, but because there's different suggestions made when dealing with the Sefer Yehoshua. But it is the first primary encampment they had when they came into Eretz Yisrael. Now, we also have talked about Gilgal before. Now, if Shaul is building a Mizbeach, where he's going to bring these sacrifices, why doesn't he bring the sacrifices on the Mizbeach, which is now in Nov?
Mm-hmm.
Why does he have to go make a new Mizbeach at Har HaKarmel? Or why can't he go bring them on the Mizbeach, which is in Gilgal? There's Mizbeach there also. Why are you going up to Har HaKarmel to offer these karbanos?
Why couldn't he just build a Mizbeach where he
was? Or build a Mizbeach where he was.
Or if he's passing Jerusalem on the way up too.
Well, Yerushalayim wasn't a place to offer anything in. But Nova's right there. Nova's is outskirts of Yerushalayim. So there's only two questions. Why build a new one? And if you're going to build a new one, why put it on Har HaKarmel? So let's first examine why build a new one. If he's going to build a new one, evidently Shaul believes that he has done the mitzvah of wiping out Amalek, which means that he has done something which is going to usher in a new era. Mm-hmm. Something new has happened. This is something which is a seminal event. Amalek is gone. Amalek is wiped out. Three mitzvahs we were told to do when we get into Eretz Yisrael. Anoint a king. Wipe out Amalek. Build the Beis HaMikdash. Let me ask you a question. You can anoint a king. Can the king be killed or be taken into exile?
Yes.
Yeah. In other words, you can anoint the king. That can be undone.
Mm-hmm.
If you build the Beis HaMikdash, can it be destroyed?
Yes.
That can be undone. If you wipe out Amalek, can they come back to life?
No.
I don't think so. This is a sense of permanence. Shaul has wiped out Amalek. Even if Shaul loses his kingdom, has he successfully wiped out Amalek, something which can never be reversed, which is one of the steps towards the ultimate fruition of the world, the ultimate coming of Mashiach, the ultimate world reaching its
pinnacle.
Its pinnacle, its connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One of those steps has been completed and it's irrevocable. It's done. It's it. He's building a Mizbeach to mark the occasion. This is a brand new thing. This is a cause for a special Mizbeach. And Shaul understands that the place where this Mizbeach should go is on Har HaKarmel. Now I will make it clear to you, Shaul is not wrong about where the Mizbeach should go. he is correct. The Mizbeach that marks the destruction of Amalek belongs on Har HaKarmel. The only problem is,
he didn't do it.
Mm-hmm. But he got the Mizbeach right, and he got the location right. Why Har HaKarmel? Mm-hmm. That's a good question. So that we're going to cover Mirat Hashem as well.
Vayavo Shmuel al Shaul, and Shmuel came to Shaul. Vayomer lo Shaul, and Shaul said to Shmuel, before Shmuel had anything to say, Shaul said to Shmuel, Baruch Atala Hashem, blessed are you to Hashem, Hakimosi is Devar Hashem, I fulfilled the word of Hashem. Let me ask you two questions. Number one, was Shaul expecting Shmuel?
No.
Do these words appear that Shaul was not expecting Shmuel? Does he seem surprised to see him?
Because he's pleased with himself.
But was he expecting Shmuel to be there?
No. I don't say that
he's
a Shmuel. You know, I mean, he's not surprised.
Was he expecting him to
congratulate
him?
It's just a greeting.
If Shmuel had actually wiped out Amalek, would it be strange that Shmuel would show up for this great building of the Mizbeach? I think it would be perfectly right. I think Shmuel was not surprised at all to see Shmuel. I think he said to himself, Shmuel got a nevuah. I did it. In fact, Shmuel probably expected that I would do it and knew, just like I knew, that Har HaKarmel is the place to build the Mizbeach, and so he met me here.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm still lost on this Har HaKarmel.
Well, because we haven't explained it yet.
Right, but also the third thing that happens then is the rebuilding of the base of Mikdash. So I'm still back to Yerushalayim because...
Was there a big celebration when the king was anointed? Yeah, that's first step. Second step is wiping out Amalek. There's
the
Mizbeach. That'll be a third step. Oh, that's three steps.
Mikdash, so you would think he would want to start saying...
He wasn't given the command yet. That it's going to come from Hashem.
He wasn't given the command to build the altar anywhere.
No. What I mean to say is that he did what he was told to do. He thinks he did what he was told to do, which is to kill an Amalek.
Right, that's why I would think he'd be waiting in Yerushalayim. Okay, Hashem, I did it. I'm ready here to build the Mizbeach.
He may understand that step has to be done by Malchus Beis David. He might understand that it has to come from Yehuda. The Beis HaMikdash has to come from, he might understand has to come from Yehuda. That's a possibility. So number one, I don't think Shaul was surprised to see Shmuel. Number two, did Shaul have any kind of guilty conscience?
No.
Absolutely not. This is a man who firmly believes that he has done the will of God. There is not, in his opinion, in his mind, there is not a lack at all. He doesn't feel guilty. He doesn't feel somewhat uneasy. You know, now the Navi is here. Uh-oh. Shmuel just showed up. Like, until now, I was able to play the game of, you know, of thinking that I didn't want everything to do it. But, you know, Shmuel's here. Shmuel's going to see right through me. Shmuel has no compunctions. Baruch Atah Hashem. Blessed be God. I did it. Baruch Hashem. We're ready for the Mizbeach. We're ready for the Karbanos.
Yeah.
And there's no guilt. None. Vayomer Shmuel says, Umer kol atona zeh be'oznai, and what's this voice of the sheep in my ears? The kol ha'bakar, and the voice of the cattle, asher anochi shomea, that I hear. Vayomer Shmuel says, Me Amalek yevium. We brought them from Amalek. Asher chamal ha'am al meitav atzon ve'abakar, because the nation had mercy on the best of the sheep and cattle, leman zvoach l'Hashem elokecha, in order to shech to Hashem your God. That's how you said the rest of it, hecharamnu, we destroyed. Does this pasuk sound apologetic?
No.
No or yes?
No.
Okay.
I'm trying to be humble by saying the people did it, not me.
Okay. So, to me, it's not clear to me whether Shaul was saying this with the same confidence as his previous words, or if he's starting to feel a little bit uneasy. See, Shmuel's words are a little bit, I don't want to use the word sarcastic, because Shmuel wouldn't be sarcastic, but they're a little bit...
Bitter.
Not bitter.
Belittling?
Yeah, it's not... The way you'd expect, right? It's a rhetorical question, yeah. Like what? And what is the sound of the sheep that I hear and the cattle?
Like to a child.
Well, right. There's something. There's clearly something wrong. I believe that if that statement, Shaul is getting the vibes that there's something wrong over here. Does Shaul realize what's wrong yet?
He's starting to, because he's not getting accolades.
Okay.
He's expecting accolades.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, I was just going to say that what's really missing here is that he does not reply to what Shaul is saying.
Right.
He's coming up with something completely different.
Right.
He's not saying, yes, you know, you established the word of Hashem, great job. All of that is missing.
Right. Now look at that beautiful sunset. What happened over here?
Isn't he sort of looking at Shmuel? There's a thought that the Mashiach would come next by building this base on Mikdash. Yes. Isn't that what he's gearing towards here, Shaul, in his mind?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know what order that would be in. Remember, the crowning of Shaul as king and the wiping out of Amalek were not one right after the other. There was a little bit of time between the two. I'm not sure that the building of the base of Mikdash comes immediately after wiping out Amalek.
But in his mind,
I'm not so sure.
If he's done two, then the third is.
I'm not so sure. I don't know that's true. I don't think that's what's going on over here. I think that he wants to take care of this Mizbeach because that's the next step after you wipe out Amalek. And he's expecting Shmuel to be ecstatic and to join in. And instead, Shmuel says this thing about the sheep and the cattle. I believe that at this point, Shaul is starting to realize there's a little bit of a problem here. And I do think this pasuk is somewhat apologetic. Says they brought them from Amalek. Hevi'um, they brought them from Amalek. That the nation had mercy on the best of the sheep and cattle in order to slaughter to Hashem your God.
He's moving himself so out of it.
And the rest we destroyed. I believe that at this point Shaul is beginning to realize there's a mistake over here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things we have to stop because we're over time already. But one of the things we have to see is eventually Shaul is going to admit that he sinned. We have to see at what point he admits. He hasn't said yet that he hasn't admitted any sin yet. At this point, he's still saying, just answering the question. The question was, what's that sound of the sheep and the cattle? And he answers the question. Honestly, he answers the question. But he does not admit to any wrongdoing yet. So we have to see how that goes as we move along. Now, unfortunately, it's going to be 2 weeks before our next class, because next week is Shavuos. So we'll have to just be able to hold on to what we have over here. As I mentioned last week, it's going to take us several classes to get through this.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.